There are few tasks more hated than cleaning the gutters. Climbing up on the roof is tedious and treacherous, and it makes those flyers promising clean gutters forever very appealing. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here today. We'll talk about what works and what doesn't in the world of gutters. Also, once the water reaches the ground, you want it to flow away from your home, not into the basement. We'll talk about the gradient around your home, how to spot trouble spots, and how to fix them. You're welcome to join the conversation at 866-780-9100 or tweet us at IPR Talk. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. And Bill, I don't know about you, but my mailbox this time of year tends to be stuffed with those flyers from different people offering products that will make it possible for me to never clean my gutters.
You don't have
ever
to clean
again.
Yeah, nothing. You'll never have to do a thing. In fact, they have some sort of a special ooze that comes out of them and, you know, makes the leaves blow the other way or something. Yeah, something
like
special.
Like an invisible shield
that goes up.
So as appealing as that idea is, because cleaning the gutters is not fun, are there any gutters that do that? Are there any gutters that you can really install that you don't have to clean?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny how you look at the terminology. It's you know, went back to our crack research team here, Dennis, and we looked at, you know, like how old these techniques are to keep your gutters clean. 1908, a guy named George Cassens came up with it, and they said it didn't work then and it doesn't work now. But that's by some person that, you know, I'm not making any claims or anything. But, you know, it really depends what you're trying to hold out. Some of the gutter covers are a cover that, you know, basically goes over the top. And when you look at the names, I mean, it's almost like picking up paint, you know, that did those wacky colors they come up with. You know, there's gutter topper, gutter helmet, gutter this, gutter that. But the idea is one is to kind of put a cap over the top, and then the end kind of curls and supposedly drops the water back into the gutter itself. So the outside face of the gutter is really short, like 2 inches, instead of like 3.5 or 4 or 5, however tall. And that kind of relies on the water sticking to the surface of the metal, like through surface tension. Like, you know, like we've talked before, when it's really cold, you have this little bead of cold condensation on the end of your nose that just never seems to leave. But this curls and then drops down in the gutter. And it just depends, again, who you talk to. But if you get a pretty good rain, it just zips right over the top of it. And, it, you know, it doesn't have enough tension to curl back into the gutter. So it just kind of flies out on the big rains. The small rains, it'll work. But the problem is, if you have anything that's, say, like leaves that are wet, they'll tend to stick as well. And in theory, you know, it works pretty good, and sometimes it does. But no matter what product it is, it's always going to have something in it or tend to block it, even if it doesn't get in, to block the opening. If you've got a lot of trees, you know, around your house, for instance, mine, I don't have gutter tops on a section of gutters on my house, and I'm not big on cleaning them. I don't like doing it. But, you know, if I wait long enough, I've got a walnut tree. I got, you know, the walnuts fall down in there, and I've got pretty good, the end of the summer, about 12-inch tall seedlings growing.
Right.
Sure, you know, so it's hydroponics. But, you know, but yet if you put a screen, it depends on how big the holes are in the screen. Some of the companies have a kind of a stainless steel mesh, and the pores are so small that water actually has a hard time going through it, you know, because they're so close, the water hangs onto the edges and it won't drop down through the hole, and it relies on a lot of water pressure from the top. But then if you have pine needles, it's perfect for catching all the pine needles, but the big leaves will blow off. So it kind of depends on what kind of trees you have, and keeping the leaves away. I don't really think that you're going to ever have the perfect product, because we have too many variables of, say, you know, trees. We have a big oak leaf or, say, a big sycamore leaf, if it gets wet, if it's raining, and then it takes the leaf with it, it comes down and it sticks to that gutter. And you know how sometimes it sticks, and then when it dries, it really sticks. And so it may not completely clog, but yet you may not be able to allow the water to come in around that little rounded edge and drop into the gutter itself. Some of the companies, what they'll do is they'll have a larger intake at the when the you know for the gutter for allow the gutter to go to the downspout. They'll have a larger hole there, say maybe 3 inches by 4 inches. But then a lot of our commercial and residential covers that we have that allow water into a drain tile, they're not made that big, so all of a sudden now they throttle down to a smaller size. And it's fun to do a lot of reading, read about what one company says about another, you know, and oh, they don't know what they're doing, and they're arguing about where that restriction should be, at the top or the bottom. And when you really think about it, when water goes down a downspout, it doesn't go down the center in the air, it goes down the edges. And so it's really not that big of a factor, because you have this huge downspout taking a lot of water and you have this little 3x4 hole, you're going to get some backup anyway.
Well, it sounds like you're saying, Bill, that there's no magic bullet. There's nothing that's going to keep us off the roof forever.
You know, you hate to say it, because I believe a lot of the companies believe they really have a good product. And when this thing is patented clear back to 1908, and you look at the 1998 patent of a certain company, it's almost identical. And it isn't. You know, the only way you can guarantee it is if you keep the leaves off your roof and the sticks off your roof. And I would rather have an open one that I can actually clean, because you're still going to end up getting granules in the gutter. You know, if you have asphalt shingles, you're still going to end up having the granules, because they'll kind of go with that water and drop down into the gutter itself. And the other problem we're having is, let's say when you have that little bit of deposit of the granules from the roof come into the gutters, is that too many installers are mounting the gutters level. You're supposed to have about a quarter inch in every 10 feet, not a quarter inch a foot, but a quarter inch every 10 feet. So the water actually does flow to the outlet. Too many of them put them up so they look straight, because homeowners, I don't like that because it looks crooked. Well, it's crooked because the water's got to go from point A to point B.
It has to flow down.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't like the look. So some installers have gone to just putting it level and say, well, it'll still get there. But the trouble is that there's no flow at all, then you get a lot of sediment, like a leaf that does blow
sludge
in there, slush, and you get mold growing in there, you know, and in some areas, if it's really a wooded area, you're going to get moss growing in there. I saw some really cool pictures of the whole gutter just filled with moss. And how's it going to flow? Because there's some of the new methods have a big chunk of sponge that fills your whole gutter. And it says, well, it can't get clogged. Well, not really, but it's clogged with a sponge. And how fast does the water actually flow through a sponge? So, you know, it's a really complicated.
You don't like the gutter toppers. What
no.
do we need to think about if you have standard gutters? What do you need to think about on a yearly basis to make sure that they are still operating, still functional?
You know, this is a case where, you know, at the same time that you have someone walk around your house and do your kind of, you know, we always talk about our spring and fall maintenance, is do the same thing with have them check the gutters and clean it. I've told before about how my mom used to crawl out. You know, we had to nail the windows shut so she wouldn't crawl out on the roof. So she has a person that comes and does the yard, and then he gets up and cleans the gutters every once in a while, because there's oak trees, and these things have to be cleaned about every month. So if you try to schedule it around just your spring and fall, on certain houses it'll work, on certain houses it won't. But I think it's good to really get up there and clean them, either with they have these attachments for leaf blowers that arch up and then blow it. But I think you really have to physically go up and look, because especially after winter, the odds in Iowa are usually that we do get them full of ice and snow. Even with a gutter topper, sometimes you'll have ice dams on top. So you'll maybe get some roof damage. So you want to check and make sure the shingles are good where the gutters attach to the house. The way some of the gutters are installed, some have a little clamp with a screw that goes back into the fascia board. In some places they call them a gutter board. But the wood that you attach the gutter to. Some use screws. Some use a spike and a ferrule. It's like a sleeve that the long spike goes through, and you're supposed to nail it into the end of the rafter. And some have a bracket that goes up underneath the shingles. Well, if it goes up underneath and it's loose, now you've got a roof leak, and then you know you're going to have all kinds of rot. So you have these three different types of fasteners, and if you have water standing in it or ice standing in it, it saturates the wood around it, and then it loosens. And you know, if you drive around a lot of houses, you can see where that spike's sticking out, and then in the spring somebody goes and hammers it back in. You're completely wasting your time because you're putting it back in a hole that just came out, and that wood's rotting. And so there's a case where having that gutter, and if you're not going up and physically cleaning it all the time, and it gets a lot of water buildup, that you're just ruining the whole bottom of your roof. You're kind of defeating the whole purpose. And in some cases, we don't really need to have gutters. You know, it's if you get your overhang out there 2 feet or 3 feet, a lot of houses now are designs are coming out where the overhang is 3 feet. They're dropping the pitches down now on roofs and going out farther so the water drops off and then it flows away from the house rather than having the downspouts and having all those issues because, you know, some of the prices for these systems, you know, they're paying $3,000 to $6,000, and you know, and I just cringe at that kind of money. But like you say, there's no magic bullet, and there's no tactful way to say it. But no, I'm not a big fan of them at all.
So we don't have a lot of time before the break. We can talk about this a little bit more after. But of course, you're welcome to join our conversation as well with your questions at 866-780-9100. A problem that a lot of us have, even if our gutters are doing their job, is that when there's a heavy rain, we have water flowing toward the foundation of our home.
Right.
So how do you spot trouble spots in a situation like that?
You know, that's pretty easy to spot, is just stand and look at the edge of the house and notice if the ground slopes towards the house in the first 5 feet or so usually. It's kind of masked sometimes by our landscaping, though, is we sometimes think that you'll see a lot of rock landscaping, like river rock landscaping, sometimes mulch, that comes out 3 feet maybe from the house, and it may look level. Well, it really doesn't matter what the top of that is because the water goes through it. The ground underneath it may be sloping towards the house, and then all the water that comes down, like say during a deluge, flows right back into your basement.
You may have a deep buried problem.
Yes, you may.
There. All right. Well, I'm talking with Bill McAnally. He's our home improvement expert, and you are welcome to join our conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm here with Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert. And you are welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Dave is on the line from Norwalk. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Charity. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Dave.
Bill, could you explain to me, I've been flirting with the concept of Mr. French's drains for a long time. What is, I'm so tired of the gutters. I want to extend the roof and put in French drains and
sure.
be done with it. Is that smart? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Dave.
Yeah, what Dave's talking about is extending the gutters out, have the water drop down into basically a trench full of gravel, and if you have a high amount of water, a lot of times they'll put a drain tile in the gravel. So they'll go down maybe 18 inches, 2 feet, and either leave the gravel exposed on the top or put some people put kind of a decorative fabric. I don't like that. I like the look of the gravel. When it's done right, it looks super. It takes the water away very fast, and as long as you have a place to carry it, and it makes a lot more sense because what happens is that will take all that water that you get in a deluge, yet a small mist that keeps drip, 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 and there's no maintenance except, okay, I need to run the leaf blower, you know, or neighbor kid needs something to do, pay him a penny for 20 leaves or whatever, but, you know, to keep the rock clean. And when it's done right, it looks really sharp. It really does.
And that will keep you off the roof forever.
Yes, yes, because it's a tremendous amount of injuries climbing
on the roof. Though? How do you do that?
Well, it really isn't that hard because, you know, we were just talking about that fascia board. Is if you do have gutters, what you can do is you take the gutters and you take that fascia board and then you sister a small, like mini rafter onto the rafters that are there. In some houses, it won't work because a real steep pitch, if you add that on, then your window may hit it when you open the window up. I mean, if you, for every 12 inches you go out, you come down 12 inches on a, like I say, a 45-degree roof, and it may not work. It may not look good. But on houses with a lower pitch, you know, like you see the houses that were built in the 70s, you know, and maybe early 80s, that lower pitch, it's very easy to add that on. And it really isn't that noticeable. And then you just reshingle in that portion. What you would do is you would make that extension equal like multiples of 5 inches so that your shingles you could be able to tie in and nobody would notice. Huh. But French drains have been around for – they've been around forever. And it's a lot easier. You get a little bit of splash. People say, "Oh, I don't like the splash," you know, back up on the house. Well, if you're out 2 to 3 feet, it isn't that big of a deal. And some homeowners have tied them into their landscaping around the house. So what you'll see is maybe 2.5 feet of landscaping, and then there'll be this extra band of rock that's out maybe another 18 inches with no plantings in it. And it looks like a border, but actually that's your ground gutter system.
Interesting. And so price-wise, how would that compare to putting in a new gutter system?
Well, when it's done at the time of the house, it would be, and a lot of times, less than what a gutter system
sure.
would be. It, there again, I mean, the prices on some of these systems, when you looked at it, they ranged from, you know, $2,000 to $6,000 to $8,000, which, holy smokes, you know, that's a lot of money.
But if you wanted to retrofit a house with a wider roof,
sure,
that seems like that might be pricey.
It would be. It would be. But yet, it's a very
permanent solution.
It's a permanent solution. But then, yet, it's for smaller home improvement companies. You know, they can tie that in. Let's say if they're going to put new metal softening on a house. You know, a lot of the houses we had in the 60s, 70s, 80s, we had wood softening underneath before we went to the metal. Soften, you know, the overhang. And if someone upgrades, that's the time to do it because then they can upgrade the underneath and then they can cover the fascia board with metal all at the same time. And then it becomes not such a project. It's tied into something else.
All right. Next up on the line at 866-780-9100 is Hayes from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Hayes.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, morning.
I just had a question for the caller or for your guest about the increasing number of steel roofs that I see in the area and my kids take on, you know, not only their functionality but also their cost and whether or not he thinks that they would be worth it as opposed to a traditional asphalt shingle roof.
All right. Sir. Okay, thanks a lot, Hayes.
Yeah, sure.
And he was breaking up a little bit, so I'll repeat. He just wants to know what you think about steel roofs, Bill.
I really like steel roofs. It's funny. I was just talking with a friend of mine last night about them. He's trying to make a decision whether to go with asphalt or with, you know, a steel, and he can't decide what kind of steel he wants to put on because we were talking, okay, asphalt shingles. In Iowa, you know, we're probably going to have a hailstorm within a 25-year period. So no matter what kind of asphalt shingles you put on, they're probably going to have to be replaced. So he wants to have something that looks not like a pole barn. And so there, you would go more towards a commercial-looking steel. They call them standing seam. And you'll see them on buildings where it's flat for maybe a foot or 16 inches, and then you have this little ridge about 2 inches tall, and it's flat again. Standing seam means there's no fasteners. Not any fasteners, but none of them are showing. So everything is hidden so that they're not exposed to the rain, and they're, you know, a lot less maintenance if there ever was any maintenance to it, but a lot less chance of leakage. Some of the panels, the 36-inch wide panels that they're putting on houses now, the fasteners are still exposed, But they're a better looking panel, I think, than what we used to see on the pole barns. A little, so you can get a heavier gauge. But if you're really looking for looks, you would go towards a metal shingle. Something like a Decra is one, D-E-C-R-A. That particular brand's one we've used. And they have a 50-year warranty. And I don't know how in the world that it wouldn't last 100 years. You know, we took them and tried to just beat the heck out of them, run over them with the backhoe, try to get the particles to come off the steel, and they're epoxied on. It's not like they're glued on. They're epoxied. And it's a very, very good, very classy look of a roof. I mean, you don't have to worry about the wind. You get some discount on your insurance because of fire and wind and hail.
You're a fan.
Well, when my shingles are done in my house, the son-in-laws are going to be putting on, they don't know it yet, but they're going to be putting on a metal roof on my house, and I'll be in the lawn chair sipping lemonade.
So I have seen different looks for the steel roofs now. You seem to have a lot more options color-wise, that kind of thing. They're getting to be more attractive.
You know, they are. And then they have, you know, they have a lesser cost look of a shingle. They have some that look like a Mediterranean tile. You're right. They've really come along in the last few years because people see a real value in it. I mean, it's a definite upgrade. It's sometimes twice, maybe three times the cost of shingles, depending on what you have. But the maintenance is just way down. And I think the public opinion is getting a lot more open. When people go down, they don't, oh, geez, you know, looks like he took it off the old barn. It isn't that anymore. More people are thinking, you know, maybe I really kind of like that now. But they are getting so many different colors, especially you see a lot more of these like emerald greens.
Right.
They really look nice. They really look sharp, yes.
Dick in Dubuque has another question about steel roofs, and you're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Hi, Dick.
Yeah, coincidentally, I was just I thought it'd be good to have a whole show on that subject, the asphalt versus steel, and then steel over asphalt versus tear off, all that stuff. But anyway, the question was related to gutters and attaching gutters. But I had heard one that on steel roofs, the water runs off faster, so you need a larger gutter. I don't know, that didn't seem to make sense, but maybe it makes a little sense.
You know, it is true. It does. Come off a lot faster in a heavy pour because it's not reading, you know, hitting the restriction of the particles on the shingles where it would kind of stick to it and kind of takes a little while to get that off. But yeah, they do upgrade it to maybe a 6-inch instead of a 5-inch. The ones we've worked on before, they just upgraded it to a 6-inch wide gutter at the top.
It doesn't sound like a big difference.
No, it isn't. You know, really all it is you just tell them, hey, I want a commercial size, and it's well worth it. And a lot of times that it's a little bit beefier metal on the 6-inch. And so if you do have some issue, sometimes maybe with icicles, they hold up just a little bit better. The only downside, though, to steel roof, especially on a steep pitch, is if you have an entry underneath the steel roof, you have to put these small brackets on the roof to stop any ice or heavy loads of snow that will suddenly let loose. I could just see the timing. You know, I'm just pointing up at it or something, and then you get wiped off the sidewalk by a avalanche of snow or ice. But it does tend to let go and then slides off and hits. So they have these small brackets and diverters sometimes that they'll put on the ribs. So if people look and they'll see like a little wedge shape attachment at the bottom, that's what that's for, is to kind of break up the snow or ice that may let go off the roof. That's about the only downside.
Does that cover your question, Dick?
Pretty much so. Okay, thanks.
Yep.
All right, thanks a lot for your call. And we have an email from Aaron. He says, we bought our home a little over a year ago. Our foundation has been anchored on one side of the house. I don't know when this was done or who did the anchoring, but it seems like our foundation may still be settling. When a foundation is anchored, is that supposed to be the end of the problem, or is this something that needs to be maintained over time?
It's supposed to be maintained. Hopefully there's somewhere in the vicinity of the where the bolt actually comes through the wall onto that large hanger. There should be a maintenance chart. You're supposed to tighten that up every so often. Unless that wall is perfectly straight now, you're supposed to tighten it up every few months or whatever. And I think most of the companies, if you just called one of the anchored wall systems around and say, you know, I bought the house, I don't know whose it is. You know, they'd be more willing to help you out. You know, they don't really care whose system it is. They'll still be able to, you know, answer some questions for you. But you know, we've gone through these wet and dry cycles, and we've seen a lot more homes doing settling than I think we have in the past because of that huge amount of water we had in the ground, and then it settles out, and the ground is going back to where, you know, it's becoming acclimated to what it was before. So we're seeing some more settling, I think, events than maybe we have in the past. So just keep an eye on things. If you have cracks in the foundations, just go to an automotive section in the store, or stop by Napa store or something, and ask for a small feeler gauge. And that's a little gauge. They check gaps on spark plugs. Well, all you can do is line up these little sections of metal in the gauge, and you can keep track of how wide your cracks are in the walls, and then keep a chart and see if things are settling. And if they do seem to be settling quite a bit, you know, and it's very noticeable, then I would get a hold of either a structural engineer or a contractor that specifically works with foundations.
Okay. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 866-780-9100. Bill McAnally is here today, our home improvement expert, and you can ask him questions about any of the projects going on at your home or business. 866-780-9100 is the number of the call. And we do still have a few lines open for you right now. Greg is on the line now from Iowa City. Hi, Greg.
Well, hey, Charity. How are you doing today?
Good. What's your question?
Good, and thanks for having Bill on.
Thanks.
I typically have an older home built in the 40s, mid-40s, in Iowa City, and we have terrible clay dirt that just will not absorb water for anything. And we have basically 15 feet between my house and the neighbor's house, and as the water runs off both of our roofs, it collects in that area between the houses, and we're talking a span of about 30, 40 feet, and what happens with a big rain or in a big melt in the spring is from the snow is that you get, we both get water through the window wells.
Yeah.
Basically, they look like little aquariums.
Yeah.
So what we're thinking, we've measured it off, and I called the one call everything. What we're going to attempt to do is dig a trench and then put a tile line in it, and I just thought I would get your thoughts on that. Basically, so the tile line would be there to drain off a lot of that extra water as opposed to forcing it into the window well.
That's exactly what I was. That's exactly what I would have told you anyways. You know, I think maybe I'd kind of go back to the French drain. An earlier caller, I think it was Dave, was about, you know, filling that trench with gravel as well as with the tile. And then, you know, it'll take it away a little bit faster. It's good that you can work with your neighbor. You know, you're lucky. If you can somehow slope the ground maybe a little bit more, so that the water gets away a little faster. So when, you know, especially during the when the thaw period, that, you know, you get that freeze thaw that hopefully that the stuff underneath at the ground level will kind of go on down into an angle if you take the soil and slope it towards the trench, that'll maybe run that water away a little bit faster when it's underneath the snow and underneath the ice. That's a good idea. Well, he's lucky he's got a good neighbor.
Well, good luck with that, Greg. And you mentioned building up the soil. Is it that simple? If the gradient around your house is sloping toward your house, can you just build up soil next to your home?
You know, you can, but you don't want to get too high. You still want, ideally you want 8 inches between your siding and the soil. And you know, we all seem to build our houses too close to the ground to start with. So as older as they keep landscaping and adding mulch and doing this around the outside edges, it maybe builds up too high. So you may have to pull the landscaping out and then regrade that section of your yard. And that can get into a, you know, a pretty big project. You're bringing in a bobcat, you know, and you're having to haul stuff away. And then when do I do it so that I don't ruin the rest of my yard? I mean, there's a lot of concerns. And the other thing is when you bring in equipment, you know, the caller talked about the anchored walls, you know, they're caving in because of soil conditions and wet soil. You bring in a piece of equipment that isn't distributing its weight, like some machines don't have tracks, they'll have wheels, and so then they'll have, you know, create weight in a more pointed area, and you may cause more damage to your basement, trying to fix it by bringing in equipment and being too close to the foundation cause it to buckle in. So that's always a scary item. And so you want to make sure that before somebody comes in and does the work, you've documented what your basement looks like from the inside and the outside. You've held a level up against it, taken measurements so that you know exactly what it is before you start. And before the contractor starts, say, take them down or say, this is what I've got right now, so everybody's clear that if something does happen, there's no arguments. I mean, there's nothing to debate. Yes, it moved in. Now what's our recourse?
And do people in this business take an oath to do no harm?
They should. They should, yes. Oh, yeah.
It's Home Improvement Day on Talk of Iowa. My guest is Bill McAnally, and you are welcome to join our conversation. You can send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page at Iowa Public Radio. Or, of course, you can call 866-780-9100. We're going to take a short break here, and then we'll be back to answering your questions about your home improvement projects. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm here with Bill McAnally, and we are here to answer your home improvement questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Al is on the line next from Fairfield. Hi, Al.
Hi. A friend of mine who does home inspections went on my roof and said, "Ooh, you've got all kinds of pitted areas on your asphalt." Sorry, I don't have steel shingles.
Yeah.
He said, "Well, you got to replace the shingle." He thought replace the shingles, and of which there are many. I think this happened probably when the house was originally set, because it's a modular home.
Okay,
they have these big crane things that have to attach to the roof to pull it up and all that. But there's just symmetrical pitting marks, and wondering if there's a way of just putting the sand back on, putting the gravelly stuff back on the shingle with some kind of material, or do you have to replace the shingle itself?
Is there a hole through it, or is it just a divot?
It's a little divot where that sandy stuff is gone.
Oh, if you just want to do a cosmetic fix, you can just get the asphalt cement. Comes in a small tube.
Yeah.
And just put a small glob on it and then sprinkle some of the asphalt grain on it. And there should be plenty of it in your gutters if you have a gutter.
No, that's true.
Yeah, okay. You should have pounds and pounds of it, so you don't have to go buy any. But that's usually what roofers will do if there's a cosmetic flaw or something happens when they're putting it on. And and once it heats up, it's going to probably just about as good as what the original shingle is. But just go up and check on it. But when you're up there, just be sure and wear something like tennis shoes, something with no, hiking boot type bottom or anything like that.
Yeah, so I don't get sliding off.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that sounds like a better plan than replacing many of the shingles.
Yeah. Otherwise, you'd have to, just replace one tab at a time. And you'd want to do that first thing in the morning when the shingles are still cool, but yet you can walk on them and just take a small Wonder Bar up, a flat bar, and you can take out one tab at a time. And they're fairly easy if you get it at the right time of day.
If you were cheap, which way would you go?
I would probably put the asphalt with the granules back on if it was me. Yeah, because knowing my luck, I'd take out one, and all of a sudden now I've wrecked another one, and all of a sudden I'm
okay.
Patching the whole roof, and so that's probably what I would. If there's not a whole lot of them, and it's just cosmetics.
Well, there's a number of them, but
yeah, as long as they don't go all the way through the shingle. If they go all the way through the shingle, then I'd replace it.
Okay, gotcha. Appreciate it. Thank
okay.
you very much.
Yep.
Thanks a lot for your call, Al. Next up, we've got James in Iowa City. Hi, James.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
I was starting to scrape my garage yesterday to paint it, and I noticed some of the siding was cupping. And when I looked at it, it's tongue and groove. Tongue on the bottom going into the groove of the one above it.
Okay.
And the tongues are not actually in the grooves. on many of them. And when I look in there, I can see the fiberglass insulation, so there's no sheathing under it.
Huh.
And this is a flat. It's about 3/4 thick, flat on both sides with
sure.
a tongue down the middle. I believe it's called drop siding.
Yeah.
Should that have sheathing under it, or am I going to have to redo it and put it with the tongues in the grooves the way it was supposed to be?
So are you going to take it off?
I think I am at this point. It'll save me a lot of scraping, too.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I think that's what I would do is I'd take it off then and put the tongues into the grooves.
Right, right.
You know, you may want to look at something else. If you have access to a planer, U.S. Forest Products Lab, when they were dealing with redwood with lead paint, what they did is they ran it through a planer and took just the surface of the wood with the paint off so there wasn't any dust. In case
oh,
it's,
sure.
And that way, you know, you still wear a good mask and everything, but then it saves all the scraping, and then you have a nice smooth surface to adhere the paint to. That you're not going to have that lumpy paint surface.
Right.
Plus, plus you have a nice fresh wood surface for the paint to adhere to. And I know some guys have been doing that, and they're a lot happier, especially if it's a pine or a redwood or cedar, and they just take just enough to take the paint off. But you got to watch, make sure there's no nails or anything.
Right.
Yep.
Would you advise putting sheathing under that, or is that kind of a two-in-one sort of product?
Oh, it's kind of it's supposed to be a two-in-one.
Okay, that's sort of what it looked like. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for your help.
You bet. Go ahead.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, James. Next up, we've got Sharon on the line in Johnston. Hi, Sharon.
Good morning.
Morning.
I just, out of curiosity, was thinking, what would be the pros and cons of building a house on a slab as far as water issues and flooring restrictions and being on a cement floor, it's hard surface. Does it restrict you from putting in, like, in-floor heating and that kind of thing?
No, actually, slab-on-grade is perfect for in-floor heat. And a slab-on-grade, what you would do is you just have... you would still have concrete on the edges, that would probably go down 2 feet. You would use they call it a shallow frost-free foundation. And you would have, 2 inches of foam underneath your floor and down the foundation and going out under the ground about 4 feet so the frost can't get underneath the slab. And when you do this, then it's the ideal situation for in-floor heat that you would have since you would have the 2 inches of foam below it, you'd have a vapor barrier, and then the tubing would be in the concrete, and that would be your heating system. And if you wanted to go, for air conditioning, is they use a high velocity cooling system that has a small duct work, like 2 inch diameter, 2.5 inch diameter duct instead of the big boxy stuff. And you can put any kind of floor that you want down. It does cut down a little bit on the efficiency of the in-floor heat if you put carpet over the top. But if a lot of people put ceramic tile or wood flooring down over the top of the concrete, it's a very good system. I've got some friends that have homes on slabs, and they're really happy with them.
All right. That gets us back to last month's conversation about storm safety.
Sure. And then you just integrate a storm room into that situation. And it's surprising how many calls and stuff that we've gotten between last month and now on it. It's pretty interesting.
Bob's on the line next from Bettendorf. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
I have a building with a flat roof, and there are some low spots, maybe a couple inches, 3 inches low. And what do I fill those in with? It's a built-up roof with tar and tar paper.
It is. Okay, so you don't want to put any kind of slope on it? You want to leave it flat?
Well, I want, I don't want to spend $50,000 on
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah, if you can find those, are you going to put a new flat roof over the top of it, though, then, right?
Yes.
Okay, are these spots, like, how large diameter are they that are 2 and 3 inches?
Maybe... 10 foot by 10 foot. This is a very large roof.
Oh, okay.
4 foot roof.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe that's where some skylights were or something at one time. But right before you roof, I would just go ahead and layer some insulation board down over the top of it and build it up in increments and use a straight edge, say like a 16 foot long straight edge, to set over the high parts. And then you would just put layer upon layer of a filler, something light like a foam, so it doesn't add extra weight to your roof. And then just build that up so it's flat. And then when you put your next roofing over the top of it, then it should all be acclimated to the right height. You know, in the center of the dip, it may be, let's say, 3 inches deep, and it may end up being feathered up to a quarter of an inch, and then you'd be in a lot better shape.
The problem I've run into is the foam board that I've looked at. Any kind of glue that's compatible with the foam is not compatible with the old tar paper and tar roof, that I've not been able to find a way to glue it down.
Okay, because you looked at the extruded foams, didn't you? The blue.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. That's going to be the issue. Some of them, though, what some builders have done is they've put a small membrane over the top of that patch, and so that there's no glue that attaches to the foam; it just attaches to the membrane.
How do you attach the membrane, though?
That membrane, that membrane then is attached to the old roof with the same type of adhesive you normally would use. So there's no adhesive touching the foam. It's just the patch itself is just on the rim, on the outside edges.
See.
Yeah.
What would the membrane be made out of?
It's usually a heavy polyethylene. Or some of them use a EPDM rubber, like a pool liner. And those, actually, you can buy those at the big box stores, the size you're talking about. So if you want to do that yourself, yeah, then you can use that over the very top.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks
a lot for your call, Bob. Next up, Thomas from Des Moines. Hi, Thomas.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Just two quick questions. I have a walkout two-story basement that's 12 years old, and there is a sump pump in there, but there's never anything in it, even in the most torrential of downpours. Should I have any concern? I don't have any water coming in the basement anywhere, and I know that it just seems obvious of, yeah, if there's nothing coming in, there's nothing to be concerned about. But should I have any concern, and do walkouts need sump pumps?
It really depends on your soils, you know, because we did a house a few years ago that I would have sworn that pump would have been running all the time, and I don't think it's ever run either since we put it in. And it, I don't know why it's not, but it's never had any water in it either. It's got a lot of gravel around the foundation. Everything is. You just may be that lucky that you're on top of a site that the water table's so low that you're fine. If you don't have any water coming in and no leaks, and you never have it in the bottom of your pit, you know, I would look down in the pit and make sure there's drain tiles attached to it, but.
Yeah, I'll double check that. It looks like there is, but I've just been surprised, and my wife even asked me when we got storms a month ago, she's like, is it running? And I said, no, it's never run in the three years we've lived there.
I think I'd go to church, put extra money in the plate then, because you're pretty lucky.
All right. So it's a misnomer to think that a walkout would not ever need a sump pump. It's just more based on the soil content,
right,
the runoff,
right,
whether you need it or not.
Yeah, because sometimes, you know, every soil and every lot's different. Say the back half of your foundation may be in a wet area, and then the front where the part where the walkout is may be dry. You know, these lots are so unpredictable as to what kind of soils that you have underneath them that a lot of walkouts have a drainage system that's maybe 2 feet lower than the floor, then it goes to daylight or goes to a sump pump system because they're wet.
Okay.
So you're lucky.
And then a solar attic fan, worth it or not, just for circulating the air in the attic?
I wouldn't. I would just rely on what the passive system you probably have.
Okay.
All right, Thomas, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Kevin on the line in Ames. Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
Morning.
I have a question, which is more important than my comment, but if there's time, I'll make a comment about the gutter thing that you were talking about earlier. Do you have any recommendations for getting or solving the issue of water pooling in a garage floor?
Is the floor itself low in the center?
It's not in the center so much as I would say that the edge under the door is a little too high.
Oh, okay. You're either going to have to cut that section out and re-pour it underneath the door, so because most garage floors will slope some an inch and a half, some 2 inches from the back
right
towards the front. And if when they poured it, you know, they kept troweling and it kind of built up there, you may have to cut that section out or have someone just get a – they bring a concrete grinder in. And it looks just like a terrazzo polisher or a floor polisher. They could just grind that section down, and it's usually a lot cheaper. And then you can keep dropping the garage door down to make sure that you don't have a low spot or a high spot, you know, so that so the door sits perfectly. So, you know, I would probably have somebody come in with a grinder if it's not a real, you know, large amount that you have to take off. And actually it looks kind of cool when it's done too, but that's probably what I would do.
Is that that sounds expensive?
Well, you know, either one is expensive. I know what some people have done also is they've just cut some grooves in the concrete to allow the water just to flow out.
Yeah, I've wondered about that too.
Yeah.
I squeegee it when the weather's warm. I don't mind that, but obviously that doesn't work in the winter.
No. And, you know,
most of the winter I can do it. The garage is warm enough, but obviously I don't want all that water outside.
Yeah, the first time you fall down and blow a hip, you know, then the cost isn't too much of a concern.
All right, Kevin, thanks a lot for your call.
Thanks.
We have time for this last question from Helen. I have a house that has a roof with asphalt shingles, but there's a garage that's attached that does not have shingles because I was told that there's not enough pitch to have shingles.
Okay.
The problem is that the roof leaks at a point where the shingled roof and the non-shingled roof meet. What can I do about this?
They're just going to have to, whoever put that membrane roof or whatever on the garage is going to have to come back and run the membrane or whatever type of roofing that they have there on the garage, going to have to run it up underneath the shingles. And they may, I don't know what the pitches are, but they may have to go up 3 or 4 feet onto that shingled roof to keep that water, you know, from leaking there. That's always a spot of issue because the garage may not be on footings. It may be, you know, they just threw the two together. So the garage could be going up and down, and that poor roofer, maybe he put something there, but it keeps ripping out every time and it gets cold. So it has to be something very flexible if that's the case. And it may have to go up the roof. So you may have to pull off, you know, maybe 8-10 layers of shingles to get a very good flashing system down onto that garage. But the other problem is, too, is if you're going to probably have some ice and water issues there in the winter, it comes down off the roof of a heated house, it may be, you know, losing some heat. So now you've got a huge ice dam problem where it hits the cold roof of the garage, and that may be causing some of the leakage. And if not, it may have ruined all the flashing the roofer put on. So you might have done a really good job, but, you know, there's just all these issues going on with hot and cold and two surfaces moving up and down. Each case is different, but if you put a flexible type of a flashing there, sometimes that will take care of it.
Sounds like something you've seen a lot.
Yeah.
All right. And actually, we do have time for this last question from Jerry in Cedar Rapids. He says, I moved here from Texas, so basements are new to me. I didn't give it much thought when I bought a house. After I moved in, I discovered that the basement windows are under the ground level or below the ground level. Why on earth is this done?
These Texans just don't get it.
And he goes on to say, to me, underground windows have to be the dumbest thing I've ever encountered.
You know,
it's a bold statement.
Like screen door in a submarine. It's the same doggone thing. Yep. You know, he just needs to look at that, a bigger window well, maybe, and then it won't seem like it's upside down.
What would be
poor
the purpose
Jerry
of that? If it's an exit, you know, window, that makes sense.
Well, every old basement had a, you know, a little 16-inch tall, 32-inch wide basement window to let light in, and hopefully you could squeeze, you know, your big belly through there to get out in a fire. But, you know, I'm sorry, Jerry, you should have done your homework.
All right. Very comforting.
Yeah.
Bill McAnally, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Charity.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, will be back again next month. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, the novel True Sisters by Sandra Dallas follows the Mormon handcart migration west, starting in Iowa City. This is Talk of Iowa.